Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Joanne Nocera. Joanne is an educational leader, creativity enthusiast, and author with over two decades of experience helping children reach their highest learning potential and teaching parents strategies to assist in the process. In short, Joanne helps students be seen, heard, and understood. She has worked with the Geraldine Dodge Foundation, MindPop, MindAlign, and the Grennan Foundation, as well as in corporate partnerships with Toys R Us, Solution First, and Home Depot. She is also a sought after speaker and workshop leader. Her book, Give Me Back My Crayons, Companion Planner, Give Me Back My Crayons Creativity, and Companion Children's Book Series, Catherine Grace, are available wherever books are sold. Welcome to the podcast, Joanne.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
It actually started when I got out of high school. I completely changed paths in the middle of my academic career in high school. I took an elective in a typing class, and in walked this woman so nicely dressed. And she handed out pieces of paper that said, here is what a secretary can make after getting a two-year degree in one of the, you know, Wall Street companies. And it was more than a teacher at the time. And that's what I had wanted to do. And I decided to change directions. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I get there, I go through the whole program, I get on the foreign exchange trading floor of a subsidiary of Goldman Sachs at the time, because they were releasing the secretaries to go out and get the interviews before like June, before the semester ended. So if you did really well, they would send you out first. So I interviewed with Salomon Brothers and Goldman Sachs and all that. And I get a job on the foreign exchange trading floor. And I'm thinking, this is great. My energy levels, this is fantastic. And then what am I doing here? What is this about? And I stayed there because it was good money, but I was unhappy on the inside. At the time, I found my husband at the time, and we had our first child, and I didn't want to stay there. And so it takes me now 11 years at night to go back to what my heart and soul wanted to do, raising my children, working full-time, going to school at night, three nights a week in the summer, on weekends, anything I could to get it done. It took, you know, to get the bachelor's and the master's, and it was a lot. And so my light was going dim. I was exhausted. I had gotten sick at the time, but you just kept pushing along because you're a mom and you have to do what you have to do. But yeah, it was tough.
Yeah. And I think you told me in the pre-chat a lot about how during this time you wrote grants to get music in school. Yes. You know, you were working a lot with the curriculum and integrating the arts into school. So that kind of leads into one of the questions about arts integration. How is it key to learning in a deeper way?
Oh, definitely. So what I found was, whenever I did a lesson and I put music into it, or I made the kids dramatize or reenact a piece of, you know, from the social studies content, they came alive. They came alive. If I had them moving in terms of mathematical concepts and geometry, they came alive. And so I started writing grants, and we went out to see lighthouses, and we learned about the Fresnel lens, and it was just one grant after another. And then some grants, I would bring the artist in residence in the school. And so not only did it help my class, it helped the other classes in the school as well. And again, the light igniting that spark, Dana. And it was just amazing to watch. And of course their academics was right there too. It just, they were doing so well in school.
So how do we ignite the spark in kids who are passive learners and help them stay curious in terms of if the educator is burnt out, especially this year?
Yeah. Well, the first thing to do is in my book, Give Me Back My Crayons, on page 40 is let's find out what kind of learner we have sitting in front of us, right?
Yeah.
So if we have a certain amount of learners that are musical or they love, you know, stories or storytelling or journal writing, things like that. Let's find out who's in front of us. And there's an easy survey on page 40 that could do that. And then the next thing would be to plan something that's fun. And I think that would help the teachers that are burnt out as well. Let's put the fun back into teaching. That really is what teaching was all about to begin with. It wasn't about standardized testing and rubrics and all of that other stuff that, you know, the SGOs and it's not about that. It's about getting those kids so ignited, so excited that they are really pushing their own learning. They are starting to become curious and wanting to look into depth more into the subject area. And so I think integrating the arts is a great thing because I think of it as spa. I know it's spark, but let's just think of it as spa, right? We're going to survey, how are you doing? How are you feeling emotionally? Where are you as a learner? And then P for plan. And then A, integrate the arts. And it doesn't have to be difficult. It's not like, well, I'm not an artist. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to show you I love this picture of Kandinsky's composition 8. I hope you could see it on the video. What a great way. You could just print this out quickly and the teachers can really just, you know, project this on a board or give this as a handout and let them look at it and say, what do you see in terms of math or colors? I mean, you could do art standards and math standards at the same time, you know, talking about isosceles triangles or right angles. You know, there's so many things you can do, intersecting lines, just for an example, and that's just visual arts. When I did a lunch and learn program, I had them bring in their lightsabers. I mean, I know this is on an elementary level, but you can do things like this middle school and high school. And the kids understood perpendicular. And so it's let them move their bodies and show that they're understanding. Some kids need to do that. Not every kid learns with a worksheet and a packet.
Yeah. And I think when we think about learning through play, right, how, you know, learners, what kind of learner they are, I think a lot of teachers have moved away from that because they're so worried about catching up or covering the curriculum that we need to stop, I think, several times throughout the year and survey our learners to find out the best learning style, because that could change also in the course of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are you going to do if you don't tap into who they are and how their brain unlocks information? You're going to waste your time, honestly, because you're going to have children who are sitting there saying, I don't get this. She doesn't get me. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't even understand what she's teaching. And what happens? They become passive. You call on them. They wait. They pause because they're thinking, if I pause enough, she's going to just tell me the answer. I don't have to think on my own. So you really do want to invest in finding out how they learn, because it's really, you're still teaching the standards, that you're not doing anything different. You're just delivering it in a certain way, or you could have them deliver it back to you in the way that they understand it. So for example, when I taught expressive writing or informational writing, whoever, like if they were reading books on the Titanic, their finished piece of writing was building a Titanic, and the portholes would open up and their paragraphs were inside of it. It wasn't just a piece of stationery and that everybody had to have the same piece of loose leaf and it was all hung up on the bulletin board in the same direction. They got to demonstrate what they learned about in their own way. So some kids had mobiles with index cards hanging, some kids had a scroll, and they were like really into it. And why not let them be seen and heard and understood in their own way? You could still mark them and grade them according to the areas in which you're looking at the writing, you know, for the structure, the content, the grammar, you know, of course, spelling, punctuation, all of that. You still can grade them at the end, but let them deliver it in the way that they know that they can. So it's exciting. It was exciting to watch.
Yeah, and that's using, you know, their learning styles and, you know, integrating a cross-curricular with the arts and, you know, language arts. And we can do that with so many subjects. It's just, you know, finding a colleague also who can maybe pair with you on that project as well. And you know, the art teacher, you know, helping the kids with that in their class. So talk to me a little bit about your experience setting up a parent academy and how that can lead to academic success and emotional well-being while also building community bonds.
Yeah, I love the parent academy. In fact, it was a great way of helping the parents who at the time were like, wait, the math is changing. This is not the way I learned math. And so we started to have programs where we would bring them in with their children. We at first said, well, let's get them in by themselves and have a parent night out. But really that became a hurdle because they have to get babysitting. They have to cook dinner. So really bringing the children, we had more attendance by having them come with their child, with their student. It was great. So we would have reading night, math night, even STEAM night. We partnered with the high school and the robotics team, and they came in. And so one side of the gym was the maker space where they got to build and construct. We connected with Home Depot. That was a great collaboration. But then on the other side was all the B-bots and the robots. And so the high school comes and makes like a little section where they showed the kids coding and how they built their robotics. And it was amazing vertical articulation that was going on. And the older kids felt great because they were helping out the younger kids. And it was such a wonderful night. And think about what happened, how they're learning and how their understanding expanded that night, because they were in their own little, you know, world of doing some STEM lessons with, you know, the librarian or the media teacher. But now they got to see it in a whole new light of what the possibilities could be moving forward, you know, to the next grade level.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having more of those nights, hopefully, as we move on past the pandemic and, you know, having parents come in, that's kind of been not really in the picture in the past couple of years, but, you know, I remember a few years ago, you know, this, like that science fair thing where kids are talking about what they've made, they're, you know, the community is coming in, they're learning about the different fields that kids can explore, whether it's elementary, middle, or high school, or a combination of all those schools, right? And I think, you know, that way kids, you know, from the outside that aren't going to school also get interested in attending the school as well.
Absolutely. We did do some Zoom. Yeah. And so a lot of the parents were on Zoom, but you can get it done. You can make it happen. And it's just great to see, you know, the whole community come together. You know, who gave donations? We definitely had food there. I remember one of our family fitness nights, we had kids yoga, we had Zumba. It was like not a party, but it was like, hey, fitness and wellness can be fun. And so we had the head of food services, you know, frying up some, you know, sauteing some zucchini and giving out recipes and, you know, thinking about the cafeteria workers in a different way. And so we never know, there might be a chef out there. So it was exciting.
Well, I talked about your book, Give Me Back My Crayons, in the bio. What inspired you to write this book, and how would reading this book help educators?
Yeah, this was really a way to get the past 23 years of my experience and say, hey, this is the way to ignite the spark. You know, I've created a roadmap for you. So basically, each chapter, there's like a little bit of stories, a little bit of instruction, and then there's creative cues at the end for parents and educators as to, hey, what do I do now? What could I do in this area, this department? And so it's fun. And then there's creativity breaks where there's meditation, journaling, maker moments. So it's a wonderful book. And I was happy to release last August, the children's book that matches the 10 keys. So Catherine Grace unlocks the keys. She kind of, it's a children's book that takes kids on a journey that it doesn't matter who you are and where you come from and what you are. It just, you can be proud of who you are and all the gifts that were given to you and be who you need to be. So she's doing great things with her friends.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
So when you were a classroom teacher, you started inspiring curiosity in your students. In the pre-chat, you talked to me a little bit about something as simple as putting a bird feeder outside the classroom. So how did that inspire curiosity in your students?
That's right. You know what, Dana? I have to say, I put the bird feeder out for me because I was saying, I said to the principal, can I just put a bird feeder out so when I'm really stressed, I could just look out the window and just be relaxed for a moment? He's like, sure, no problem. You know, so we did. I put the bird feeder out, and lo and behold, their curiosity just sparked. They're like, what's going on? So we had to set little boundaries and rules. Like if you get your work done, you could go up to the window and kind of, so they would take, I said, let's designate a little notebook. And so there you go. There's the learners, right? So the mathematical learners are creating charts, tally marks. They're remembering what birds they saw, the scientists in the classroom, the nature, you know, the naturalists out there. They are loving it. They were observing all the details, drawing diagrams, and who's writing stories, drawing pictures. And then that made me curious. And so I got online and I found that Cornell University has an ornithology lab. And this lab collects information of birds that migrate to your bird feeder.
Okay.
So think about how their learning expanded. They're like, wait, they want to know from us, a university, a college wants to know from us. Yeah. I said, yep. And so we would collect information and it just grew and grew and grew. So every time they were at the library, they were taking out books. I didn't realize at lunchtime, they were talking amongst themselves. And so they wanted to read more and find out more. And then I would get notes from the parents. Hey, is this going to be on a test? Should my child know? Is this in the curriculum?
Yeah.
So finally, I wrote a grant and we got money to take the kids to a local park. And there was Sam the Birdman and at Huber Woods. And let me tell you something. I called him up and he said, absolutely not. I cannot take second graders out on a bird watching. I only do that for fifth grade. I said, no, Sam, I'm telling you, they know so much. Please trust me on this. He didn't believe it. He said, listen, I'll give them a slideshow. You know, I said, can you promise that if they know the birds, Sam, we're going to bring our binoculars and we're going to go out. He goes, all right, you got me. If I see that they're okay, I'll take them out. I wrote to the parents, get the binoculars ready.
Yeah.
We're going. Well, we get there and he's putting up the slides and they're all the hands are being raised. That's a European starling. That's a goldfinch. And they're like, he couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. So if we keep thinking that second graders can only do second grade work, guess again, you know, we don't really know where they can take themselves. And as teachers, where we can help them to grow as learners, because they're unstoppable. If they're into it and they're excited to learn, it's amazing to see what can happen. And again, you know, putting that visual out there, helping them to take care of the feeder. You know, there's all those other things involved too, responsibility, life skills that come out of this. You know, I could have never, ever imagined giving them all this information in a packet, a worksheet, or a textbook. No, the real life was just the best. And they still remember to this day. They're like in college now. But
yeah, that was a unplanned thing, right? You just wanted that so you would look at it, but it actually turned into a whole lesson and a lot of learning for the kids. And you know, I think that real life learning and, you know, things that you don't expect would, you know, spark creativity actually did. So that's a great story.
And I often think if they pick their heads up off the device, why can't we take them to a place, a zoo, a park, and let them look around and bring a field guide? You know, those field guides that you can get them from the library or some of them have them even like in gift shops when you go traveling. They're like a folded pamphlet that's laminated, so you know it doesn't get destroyed. But just something simple like that, it can just spark so much curiosity and learning.
That is leading into my next question about getting them off the devices. So for kids, I would say probably fourth or fifth grade and up, most kids have their phones. Sometimes they do take it to school, and, you know, there's varying levels of restrictions at different schools, and varying teachers have, you know, set boundaries, you know, some is, you know, strict as others. But how can parents and teachers get kids to put their phones down and get creative? So if you want to talk first maybe about the family commitments, but also for kids at the middle school and high school level in, you know, terms of being creative instead of relying on the phone for information.
It is a tough area that we are all struggling with. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
So the first thing to do is to come up with, have a family meeting and come up with a plan, a technology plan that we are going to spend this much amount of time on the devices. And then we have to really respect the time that we are together as a family doing things, you know, because you could all be together, but everybody's on their phones or devices. But we, you know, people say, well, we're together. I go to restaurants and people, you know, their kids and everybody's keeping busy and they're not even talking to one another. So it's important to fill that time with really good quality conversations. Maybe make a plan that you're going to go on a little excursion that doesn't have to cost a lot of money and that you're going to spend some hours together. And what are you going to do there? And their curiosity, bring along a journal of some sort, crayons, anything they can do, even if they do use their phones, let's just say. So for example, when I wrote a grant for the lighthouses, like I was saying before, we did invest in a flip camera, but they were able to take that flip camera. And if you think about it, it's like what a phone is, and kind of do a video blog, like, explain what's happening. So there's reading and writing involved. They've got to research where they're at. They have to write about something. They have to, you know, communicate that to family, friends, and it becomes like a creative process, but yet we're marrying the two. Because to say that we have to eliminate it completely, we almost have to live together with it side by side, but see its purpose. You know, what is the purpose? What's the why of why we're using our phone? Are we just wasting time just scrolling, or we're really, what is it for? And it could be something really productive in teaching others and in communicating things. And so there's a lot of uses you can do, but you can have a time where it's not allowed at all. And that's just great time spending together and doing something new and different.
When it comes to like lessons and, you know, looking at facts and those types of things, how can we have students at school be more creative than relying on Siri for information?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting them into groups is really important. A lot of kids have difficulty communicating with each other face-to-face because of the devices. So I would say as much group work as you can, and have them, if the kids want to work alone, they can, because, you know, you have those learners that like, you know, by themselves, you know, the intrapersonal. But yeah, I would say that just getting them to articulate with each other, because what happens when it's like a pebble in a lake, right? There's a ripple effect. So if we talk about something, I might come up with something you didn't think of, and you might come up with something I didn't think of. And all of a sudden our learning, it gets expanded. It's metacognition, mm-hmm. right? Thinking about our thinking. And so I think that's important to do that as much as you can. A lot of times teachers put kids in middle school and high school, put them in rows, separate them out. They don't want them together. They think they're going to talk. But really it's, again, putting some rules in place and saying, hey, listen, I'd love for you to work together, but this is how it has to be. If we do work together, let's make the best use of this time.
Yeah. And I think we can get over that, let's say, battle with the kids. If we just explain, you know, there's other ways to, you know, use your time and, you know, make it a habit at the dinner table or out at a restaurant with the family, or as you said, in a class, you know, relying on others for discussion, right? So try to move away from constantly having your face in the phone. That's so important as we move on to, you know, more and more, I think, tech use as years go on. But I also wanted to ask about adults for, you know, parents listening, educators listening. How can adults be more creative if they are don't feel like they're very creative? What do you recommend?
Well, you know what? Creativity is interesting. It really comes about when we're still, right? And we tend not to be still, although COVID did help us to do that. And you saw all the creativity that was happening. But really, it could be as easy as walking in a park, just being amongst nature. Sometimes when we're really still and we're just relaxing our minds, things come to us, ideas. I mean, Leonardo da Vinci wrote 7,000 notebook pages of just any idea that popped into his head. A lot of us don't take the time to stop and say, well, let me write that down. That might lead into something, right? Sometimes we dismiss it. We're like, well, no, I can't do that right now because we're thinking big picture. We have to have it all solved. But maybe just keep a notebook of your thoughts as they come out to you and try to be still as much as you can. Even those, I love to take crayons and color. I love neurographic doodling. If you want me to show you about that, I could definitely explain that. A lot of adults, I just finished a workshop on neurographic doodling and poetry writing. And so within an hour and a half, the adults were not only creating a beautiful piece of artwork, but they were able, through memory and through what they were noticing, create this beautiful poem. So if you want, I could show it to you.
Yes, please.
All right, here we go. Let me change my camera to my overhead camera. Can you see it? Oh, there's this Kandinsky's composition 8 that I was talking about with the geometry. I'll move that to the side. So really it's as easy as this. You take a blank piece of paper and you start by drawing 3 circles. It could be any size. It could be anywhere on the paper. It could be overlapping. It could be all by itself. Okay. And then what you want to do is just, again, let your mind relax and start from one end of the paper, but it has to go through the circle in any way you'd like. It doesn't have to be a straight path. Just go through the circles and come out on the other side. And so what they found was there was this Russian psychologist that found wherever you see a sharp corner, if you could smooth those out and just relax, it actually brings peace and calmness, right? Okay. It takes the fear and confusion and it actually calms us down. And we probably could come up with some solutions to our problems, but it would go like this. So as you can see, I'm taking the corners and I'm smoothing them out. Anywhere there's a sharp corner, you're smoothing it out. You can even add, because it's all about circles, right? It's all about feeling the movement, not being stuck in a corner of some sort, just completely fluid. And so I'm just going to show you what it's going to look like. I'm going to reveal it. So it would become something like this because you would add color to it. You would take crayons, markers, anything you have. You could create dots with your Sharpie black marker, or like right here, I've created some dots, or you could create dots with the colors. After I looked at this, I was like, God, it looks like some kind of beetle or something.
It does.
But listen, there's no judgment. There's no right or wrong to this, which makes it a fabulous activity to do. But again, it's scientifically proven, it's therapeutic that doing something simple like this could unlock your creativity. So I'm happy to share that with you today. Just go back to my camera.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Something as simple as that, and a lot of adults don't think about, like, you know, there are adult coloring books, there are ways of doodling. I like to read.
Right.
I think just kind of letting your mind wander and mm-hmm. you know, immersing yourself in a story is a way of being creative. But I think if more adults would think of, you know, using something like you said, neurographic doodling, yep. or or just, you know, nature walks and things like that.
100%. Yes. 100%. And what I like about the neurographic doodling is it kind of helps you to get over like, wait, I have to create something on my own. What if I just color in the lines? Maybe I don't have to be so it kind of helps disable the perfection, because sometimes we're afraid to do something because we think we have to do it so perfectly right from the get-go. And it's really it's all about the process, not the product. It's about, you know, the steps you take to get there, the journey. And that's the beauty of life, really.
Yeah. Well, it's been so inspiring hearing you talk about just ways of helping both our students and adults be creative, and about your experience working with parents in the community. Out of everything we talked about on the podcast today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I think that just remember that art washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life. And Picasso's words, just be okay with trying something new. And you never know, like when you're in the classroom, just try something and see if that ignites the spark. If you're at home, see what happens if you take your kids on a little bit of an adventure, something new that they haven't done before. See what happens when they put the phone away. So I'm excited to hear their feedback. I would love for them to share anything that works for them.
Where can people reach out to you and find you online?
I have a website, joannenocera.com, and on Instagram, joanne_nocera. There's no E in Joanne. A lot of people put an E on the end, but there's no E. So yeah, I would love for them to share with me what they're doing to unlock their creativity and build a community of dreamers and thinkers and outside the box.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. I'll make sure to post that information in the show notes. And thank you so much. Thank it was you. A pleasure learning from you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.